Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined from KZN by Mr. Mlondi Mluli. Mlondi, how are you doing, man?
Hi, Nick. I'm good at you, and thank you very much for having me again on your show. Thank you. And hi, Gabriel.
How's it?
Always a pleasure, sir. And of course, Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you doing?
I am so sick of hearing about Nick White and that Australian scrum half. I'm very pleased that Nicholas, the host, is not a rugby fanatic in quite the same way. Wasn't prepared to wake up very early in the morning. So I think we're going to avoid all of the jokes about moustache surgery and Oscar bait coming out of that game.
I keep the same kind of attitude to rugby in general as a sport as I do to cricket when there's a match on, which is that I pop in occasionally to check what's going on and then go away. And I like to know that my team, whatever that may be, is winning, but I also don't get too hung up on it.
Yeah, no, I wish I was like you. I'm still in a bad mood.
Oh, dear. And of course, one more thing to point out, Gabriel correctly analyzed that between him and Londi, they have an entire suit. Gabriel's wearing a tie, Londi's wearing a nice jacket, and I'm letting the side down here with my poor dress. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about what's going on in SA this week. So we have, of course, this is the kind of overriding concern for us right now. And Gabriel and Londi, you guys are the campaign team. So this is the thing you guys, I think it's fair to say, sort of hyper-focused on now, which is this horrific sequel to expropriation without compensation, which is expropriation without compensation, this time without constitutional changes. And, of course, I'm talking about the expropriations bill, which threatens to seriously undermine property rights in South Africa. So, Gabriel, do you want to maybe just explain to us once again just a little bit about the bill, how it works, why it's such a bad piece of legislation? And, then we can move forward from there.
Yeah, Nick, I think I'm going to jump right to painting a picture for you of a particular scenario that will explain the underlying threat here. The preface is that at the Institute of Race Relations, we have spoken for many years, actually, about the idea that you cannot have a full democratic change of power in South Africa in one bite. You need sort of many bites. And if you think about how wild dogs hunt and take down their prey, it's a little bit how orcas sometimes are said to take down blue whales. It really is one bite at a time. You can really eat a very large whale, but not if you expect to do it in one go. Well, I think the ANC's been listening, and instead of getting EWC in one bite, they've got a sort of an orca eating the blue whale way of going about it. So here's the scenario. Someone owns a piece of land and it gets invaded. It can be sort of rural farmland, is very large and people manage to get onto the property and quickly start putting up shacks. It can be a holiday home. You're not there. People get in and start bedding down. It can be a business. And I've seen this in sort of heavy timber, sawmill kinds of businesses and other kinds of manufacturing businesses where strikes get quite heavy and your foreman can get kidnapped and ultimately the staff can kind of take over the premises and keep the owners out in this hypothesis and say, look, we want to live here. We want to live where we work. In all three of those scenarios, the following comes into play. You want to phone the police to get some help to remove these people from your property. Now, you know, maybe your private security are trying, but they're not succeeding. And so you want to resort to law enforcement. At the moment, trespassing is a sort of lower schedule offense. And so the police are almost ordered to say, we don't have the resources to come deal with this. We're going to stay away.
Well, I only realized this fact when I was a ward councillor that the police essentially have been told in many places to not bother enforcing what they call, I think, Schedule B crimes or Category B crimes. And that is everything from public drinking to public urination to trespassing to anything where someone is not in imminent danger of being stabbed. And the thought process is that, oh, we're too busy, the courts are too overloaded, it's difficult to collect evidence, this is not a priority.
So, you know, even when they're supposed to go, IPED research shows that the police are not expected to show up within the first 2 hours, I think, by most rural South Africans, within the first hour and a half. And sort of something like 20% say, well, maybe 2 hours to 4 hours. And then some people say the expected time of arrival is never. That's about 20%, I think. So, and no one's giving that order, but that is the de facto situation that you're in. Okay, so first step is people get into a property and they start bedding down. Can you get rid of them? Well, no, it's very difficult to get rid of them because the police aren't showing up to help. Second step is this. You have a window for counter-spoliation is the technical term, and that's the time you have to drive people off a property. After that window is closed, you can't do so without a court order. And to get the court order, you need to go through a long process that takes, I think, at minimum 8 months. And the end of it must be that alternative accommodation is provided to these people because they've now become dwellers. They're now living on the property. You know, and the Western Cape High Court recently said that that window is so small that if someone, you know, metaphorically manages to take off their pants, they now live there. And in practical terms, it actually means if they can put more than four pegs down, then they live there. So four pegs and a sheet of metal leaning against a tree, that sort of counts as like a construction that has perfected their dwelling. And so now you need to go through a court order process. And you can buy them alternative accommodation or you can wait for the government to do so. But if you can wait for the government, you can wait many years while people are occupying your property. Okay, step three. So the government's not helping you directly. And the law is saying actually once they've taken off their pants, proverbially, the invaders now live there and you can't even drive them off. It's actually against the law. The police will now come to stop you driving someone off your land without the court order. Step three, the expropriation bill, which is getting voted on in terms of its language in a parliamentary committee on the 14th of September. Currently, the language says, and no one expects it to change, Section 12.3 says, you can undergo expropriation without compensation if you have lost control of the land, of the property. So, you know, someone's invaded your land. Police didn't come help get rid of them. They slept overnight. Now they're dwellers. Now the police will help them to stay there. You can't get rid of them. Now it's been a year, 3 years, no alternative accommodation's been found. Government expropriates the property without compensation and says, well, why are we doing it? Well, to provide alternative accommodation to the people who invaded your land. They get to stay there, and the moving costs from the illegal place that they've invaded to the new legal alternative accommodation, that moving cost is R0. And so, of course, we as the government want to do that. We will legitimately house these former illegal land invaders and give them the dignity of living on nationalized government land. Well, you might think, okay, that sounds terrible, but at least the people who've invaded the land run the risk of going to jail because this did all start out with a crime of trespassing. Nope. The new trespassing law, the unlawful entering premises amendment bill. A lot of people are going on about other aspects of the bill. I really want to focus on what I think is the real big challenge. The other ones notwithstanding, they might also be real, but separate debates. The biggest issue is that the law says someone can claim as a defense for illegally entering a property that they believed they had a real interest in going there. So now no reasonable person can go and think that they can live on someone else's private property because they're, you know, poor. That gives me a real reason to go there. But there are some activists who are going to say that is a real reason and that it's reasonable for people to believe it's a real reason. So then even after all of this, you know, your land's been invaded, then your title deed has been taken away without compensation. You can't even have recourse of trying to, you know, privately hire a legal team to at least put some of the illegal land invaders in jail for a couple of years because they can claim this defense. Well, maybe not, because it will still go to court. And maybe the judge will use a more protective interpretation rather than one that just essentially incentivizes larceny. Nope, because you've got the Land Courts Bill, which says that on matters of fact, land activists that are ideologues can overrule judges in determining what's going on. It also sort of changes the procedures that you usually have in a court, and it changes the grounds for testing evidence, sort of gives more weight to hearsay evidence. But ultimately, on questions of fact, it says sort of specialist experts that have vested interest in the field of land reform. You know, you can imagine the kinds of people who write books about how you can tell who deserves to have land based on the color of their skin and such like, that these experts will come into play. If you add all of those pieces together, I think what you see is that in total, the effect is to say what happened in Zimbabwe, which completely tanked the economy, which completely ruined millions and millions of people's lives, almost all of whom were poor and black to start out with, finding themselves in an even worse position. That thing of land grabs, what happened there was people grabbed the land and then the law came in afterwards to try and justify it. Here, we're going to do it very differently. First, we're going to change the law, and then we're going to have the land grabs. Now, if you think that's going to save the day, you just need to look at Venezuela, which actually already did this. They changed the law first to allow for expropriation without compensation, land grabs. And they said, we're only going to limit it to they at least said, we're just going to limit it to land that's unused. I mean, that's already a terrible, terrible idea. But we've got the land that's unused, and they ruined the economy with that. We've got the unused land, which is basically like saying, you know, if you own shares in a company, you're not using them. You're just buying them to sell them at a profit later. That's the real issue. That also is subject to expropriation without compensation, section 1231. But on top of that, we say if someone successfully wrests control away from you of your land, then the government can take the title deed too. And the before and after process is going to involve the state providing the maximum incentive for land grabs and the maximum protection of the land grabbers. The only thing you need to add to that mix is politicians like Julius Malema saying, go out and grab the land, and you have the perfect concoction for ruining the prospects of growth in South Africa.
Yes, no, this is a frightening picture you've painted, and it feels very much like a sort of a hydra. You know, you cut off the big head of the EWC constitutional amendment change, and then immediately sort of three more spring up from its stem to try and attack things. But, you know, at the end of the day, Hercules did in fact defeat the Hydra, so we should probably keep that in mind. Mlondi, as part of the campaigns team, what are you guys doing to fight this bill or these bills?
Yes, Nick, well, yes. So far I've sent through a letter to banks, to the four major banks, as well as to property developers and real estate agencies, as well as the major retailers. So some bit of good news. This afternoon, I've just gotten a letter from the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa, and they've asked us for a meeting. So I guess that's a bit of good news, and we hope that we're going to get some good feedback on that. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. And yes, and with regards to the banks, they haven't really given us any feedback yet on the letters that we've sent through, but they did confirm that they've received it. So there's some more to look forward to on that. And definitely we'll keep on pushing on my side until we get all the answers that we need. If it means that we go physically to demand those answers, then so be it. We will go there physically and we will get those answers that we need.
Right, because yeah. It's really important now that, you know, private stakeholders in the economy, people who actually, you know, have a serious risk to lose here, kind of get involved rather than just wait for, you know, little NGOs to fight the battles. Gabriel, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's worth remembering that the ANC only managed to get 204 votes out of 400. In the National Assembly for the constitutional amendment to achieve expropriation without compensation. So if you go off that basis, you only have to knock off five ANC MPs or five people that MPs that aren't in the ANC that are in the smaller parties that voted for that thing. You only have to get them to stay at home, call in sick that day, you know, whichever way, you need to cut away just a few votes, and you start standing a realistic chance of being able
To decide to be stuck in traffic. This has happened before. There have been pieces of legislation that have failed to pass because, you know, certain factions of the ANC have decided to stay away and all be sick that day and not vote on them.
And it takes pressure. And the pressure, I welcome the pressure that we get from ordinary South Africans. Just yesterday, I saw in another video we did with David Ansara, lots of people signing up to the campaign every day. I mean, we're seeing it's hundreds and hundreds of signups per day in our campaign against this. We've got thousands. I haven't tallied how much it's been. It's only been 2 weeks we've been running this campaign. But we very much appreciate what ordinary South Africans are doing in terms of putting up their hands, putting their signatures down, having their voices heard. And our intention is very much to take that pressure and then apply that where it can start making a difference. So all 8,000 food retailers, their consortium is now going to come and meet with the Institute of Race Relations to understand why this is a bad issue and why they need to raise their voices again. We need to get the banks, we need to get BASA to reapply pressure. You know, they eventually bravely finally came out and said expropriation without compensation will affect food security, will affect the financial security of all South Africans and will affect everyone's prospects of serious growth. They came out heavily against expropriation without compensation last year. We need them to do it again now after Ramaphosa has said, well, you know, things have changed. We need to go forward with the expropriation bill. We need them to say, no, nothing's changed. The basic principles remain the same. We need to guard our clients. We need to guard South Africans. And the way to get that to happen is for people to sign up, is for people to call their own banks, to talk to their food, you know, to talk to anyone, property developers, anyone that's closer to the center of power. And those big businesses do wield influence. When they speak out, it does make a difference. And so, you know, you need to send the pressure uphill so that it finally gets to the top. And yeah, the best possible outcome is that a few people stay away that day. And the thing just doesn't pass, because if your hope is that, oh, just let it go through, it doesn't matter, the courts will take care of it, don't let it go through, the police will take care
never,
of it.
You never
need to look the at the whole
on the courts and on you know, in something as important as this, you don't sort of be half-assed the battle. You fight it every step of the way, because the consequences for every South African, well, almost every South African, maybe a couple of people might get rich from this, but everyone else will be disastrous for their lives and their opportunities in the future. Okay. Right. So we're definitely obviously going to come back to this topic because it's such a big deal, but it's probably worth talking about a topic that a lot of people, I think, were talking about last week. And this is something, Gabriel, you were personally involved in. And this is, of course, the AfriForum EFF incitement case. And there was much dispute about whether the singing of a certain song in a certain context was incitement or not, as well as some other accusations. So, Gabriel, do you maybe just want to give us a brief summary of what was going on and what the case outcome was?
Yeah, so I think the wrong way to think about it is that the song Kill the Boer was on trial. That's not right. What was on trial was Julius Malema, Ndlozi, and the EFF, sort of a party and two individuals, for going to Senekal, the bail hearing of the murder, two accused, subsequently exonerated, for murdering Brendan Horner, a farm worker. And in that context, there was huge expectations of violence. It was a very febrile situation. The week beforehand, people had broken into the courthouse and tried to gain access to the accused and mete out a kind of mob justice or mob injustice, as I prefer to call it. And so, you know, there was clearly a capacity for some heavy violent action on one side, and on the EFF side, there was also a long demonstrable history of connection to violence. So two potentially violent groups, Kaklema Motlante, had said, you've got to watch out. I think there could be blood on the streets and a civil war could even sort of emerge out of this. The police blockaded the entire town from sort of 20 hours before the bail hearing commenced, searching every vehicle going in for heavy weaponry. and using barbed wire to encircle the town, encircle the court, cordon off the ANC from the EFF, the EFF from a sort of no man's land, and that from the periphery of the town where the first people were protesting against farm murders. In interviews that I did with the sort of people working at the KFC, at the engine garage, people selling cigarettes on the side of the street, you know, poor people were flipping worried about what is going to happen the next day. Speaking to farm workers and farm owners around, great concern. So it really was the kind of situation in which you can't speak of a sort of dry tinderbox just waiting for a match to light it. And in that context, Ndlozi, I heard with my own ears and saw with my own eyes, seeing words to the effect of call the fire brigade, we need to go burn things down. And thereafter, I experienced the EFF crowd very differently to other crowd experiences I'd had. I've been to the largest EFF rallies they've ever had and been welcomed by some members. Some members have looked at me with dirty looks, but others have treated me with great welcome. And in contrast, on that day, people threatened to physically assault me as I was trying to conduct my work as a journalist. The only question I was asking was, how's your day going? Is this meeting your expectations? And people, you know, I was sort of effectively told by security to go away after a group had sort of gathered around me and some were trying very hard to come and beat me up. So right after that, I saw people, you know, wearing EFF regalia, hurl rocks and broken bottles and so on, break down concrete rubbish bins and hurl projectiles into a crowd. That is the effect of my test. You know, an important part of my testimony is, you know, I heard what people were saying on stage. I could see the context. I was an expert on the context. I reported on that as a journalist, as a professional, and I could immediately see not right the next minute. There was an intermediary little speech by Julius Malema, but I could see very quickly what the a kind of result. My evidence was dismissed by Judge Molahlehi. This disappointed me. I thought we got along quite nicely in the sense that he asked me questions for about 45 minutes that seemed probative, that seemed interesting, that seemed very well informed. Strikes me as a very smart guy, a very good guy. Disappointed in the judgment, can't conceal that, particularly in the fact that my evidence was dismissed. It's hard not to take that personally. But I think the bigger picture is that an appeal will be made. One of the significant issues is that insofar as my evidence was dismissed, it seemed like I had undermined AfriForum's case, because I said you can't prove that the fires were set subsequently to farms sort of on the highway back from Senekal when some of the EFF buses were camped. You can't prove that those were set because Ndlozi said, call the fire brigade, we need to go burn things down. And you can't prove that the people who went and hurled rocks and were breaking things were doing so because Ndlozi had just made a call for public violence. Because none of those perpetrators had been brought to the stand to ask them, would you have done this anyway? Would you have set fire to a farm anyways? Would you have gone and beaten up or tried to, you know, break the skulls in of people anyways? So you can't prove that there was a causal link. And the judge seemed to say that because you can't prove that causal link, and because Mr. Krauser actually said, affirmed that you can't prove that causal link, therefore AfriForum's case must be dismissed. But maybe that's the case, but my reading of the law, I'm not an expert in that, not professionally, but my reading of the law is that you don't need to prove such a link to prove that there's been incitement. That's one of the bases in which AfriForum's already said they'll go forward on appeal. I just want South Africans to remember that it's unhelpful, in my opinion, to really think simplistically of just the song being on trial. Obviously, that song must always be allowed to be sung in various contexts, including at the Apartheid Museum, which I encourage everyone to go to. It's a harrowing place to be, and you see speeches by Favurta and Malan. You hear that song being sung. You see ropes from the gallows that were used to execute political prisoners. You can see all kinds of horrific things from our history, and it's very important to hold on to. You mustn't shy away from our history. We have to confront it in appropriate contexts, in ways that can actually sort of bring out the best in us. I'm not for shying away from things, and there's always going to be contexts in which that song is protected and important. The question is, when a crowd is angry, when respectable people are saying the chances of violence are extremely high, when the police are on tenterhooks, is it appropriate for a political leader to stand on a stage and say "shoot to kill"? Is it appropriate to say, you know, "go burn those things down"? Is that incitement, or should we treat those politicians as if they are kind of performance artists dealing in irony, whose words are unlikely to have any real world effect, and ignore the mob violence, or understand that to be somehow a miscarriage of the meaning that had been brought forward?
That's the traditional defense of the notorious website 4chan and a sister or cousin, I guess, 8chan, where people are always defended when people say horrible things on that. People say, no, they're just being ironic. Lonnie, you and I were talking briefly before this, specifically about, you know, this song being sung in that kind of political context, in the sort of non-historical context, in none of the exceptions that Gabriel talked about. I mean, what's your brief take on this one before we move on to our last story?
Yes, Nick, you know, like, the singing of the song is really unfortunate, in my opinion. I mean, I struggle to actually understand why would someone sing such a song. I mean, why would you sing about the killing of a group? I mean, or like a person, why would you do that? It just doesn't make sense for, you know, for me, and, you know, and things like that. We don't need, you know, in our society, and definitely we don't need such things. So it always gets me as to why do you want to do
this. Can I just jump in and answer the question? So the EFF's expert witness, Professor Gunner, she came in to say, what does it actually mean? It doesn't mean hurt farmers. She said the person in charge, the kill the farmer means vote out Ramaphosa. She said the Boer is the system and Ramaphosa represents the system. And kill, it doesn't mean physically kill. It means you must remove the elders and replace them. So kill the farmer, you must listen carefully. It means vote out Ramaphosa.
You see, Lonnie, you made the mistake of listening to words and taking them as what they generally mean. You have to put yourself in some sort of mystical mindset where you can divine the answers. Anyway, no, much to say on this topic, but I think we must jump very briefly to our last topic. And there's not much to talk about here, but it is kind of funny. And that is that the ANC's KwaZulu-Natal leaders have decided that they need to go to visit Jacob Zuma, former president, to seek his wisdom on the issue of building the nation. A spokesperson for the party said, "We've spoken, amongst other things, the issue of building the nation. We spoke about things on how to make sure you transfer back what belongs to the people of KwaZulu-Natal, the economy, the wealth, the land. We also consulted Ubaba on fostering unity in the party and uniting the ANC in KZN. And he gave us some good advice on that. And they said that it was the first of many, and they hoped that there would be more meetings with Jacob Zuma to seek his political wisdom. Gabriel, very briefly, your thoughts.
Oh, man. 2 weeks ago, I said the thing about the ANC is it's like an addict that is able to identify the problem. But although that's the first step to solving the problem, it's not the last step. Like, you see these guys standing on the TV, they're like, oh, we had so much corruption. We've got to get rid of the bad, corrupt guys. We've got to change our policies. But this addict has now even forgotten the problem, or that problem. So it's like now they've gone backwards from taking the first step to taking the zero step. Like, it's amazing. And I'll just add to, so, you know, if you think Zoom is where you need to get your wisdom, then you're not thinking twice. And I suppose the ANC can't be accused of thinking twice for the most part. I'll add that you shouldn't refer to Zuma as Ubaba, because Professor Gunner said that the Boer in kill the Boer, it's not just Ramaphosa, it's also Zuma. Kill the Boer also means you must get rid of Zuma.
Presumably through a studied and professional legal process that takes time to analyze all of the evidence. Interesting. Lonnie, you know, the ANC in KZN is still obviously treating Zuma as though he is the key to politics in KZN. But, you know, you're from that neck of the woods. Do you really think that Zuma is still relevant to people outside of the ANC in KZN?
To be honest, no, Nick, he's not. KZN is kind of terrible, well, at least in all the places that are run by the ANC, and we, the people of KZN, just want a service, a delivery, and we don't care about Jacob Zuma. In fact, we want to see that man in jail. You know, he's done so much of harm and you know, a corruption, so we don't care about him. We just want to see a service, a delivery.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the polling very much supports your point there. Up till now, all the polling I've seen suggests the ANC is going to drop below 50% in KZN. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. We hope that you enjoyed the show. We hope that you found it interesting. And we will, of course, see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a good one.